The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Your discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Sleep soundly, darling, or should we say, don't slowly own. You pay so much to grip those breasts of silicone. You did not know, while on that bed, that you'd be sailing into stormy times ahead. Hush money sent at your direction was meant to raise your faltering election. Sleep soundly, Dawn, and think about your better times before the state of New York charged you with these crimes. Then when the judge would not recuse, he passed a sentence that you simply can't refuse.
Patrick Fitzgerald does it again. Don Snorleone. I think that's the end of it. Yes, Don Snorleone. Funny stuff. I've got another one, but I'm going to save it for tomorrow because, you know, we've got another day that I can do this. Now, on Fridays, I don't have time to play a song because Marcy Wheeler's here on Fridays and we jump right in. So, breaking news today, in case you had not heard, you know, the trial of the century, well, at least the first of four, we hope, trials of the century, that got underway on Monday, is off today. The Trump, and I'm not going to call it the hush money trial because that's not what it's about. It's about falsifying business records to interfere with the presidential election. But that's wordy, right? So people say the hush money trial, but that lessens the importance of what it is, you know? So anyway, that trial yesterday got seven jurors seated. Who knew? It got off to a really, really slow start, and then it picked up steam because the judge, Marchand, I believe is his name, or something close, it knows what he's doing. Eileen Cannon might want to watch Judge Marchand to see how he does things. Just saying. Anyway, Wednesdays are a day off so he can take care of other business for the court. And, you know, so they're off today. They're back tomorrow. And they expect to have the rest of the jury seated by the end of the week and start opening arguments on Monday. Let's go. Let's go, Daniela. It's my attempt at a Brandon kind of thing, you know, whatever. Kind of stupid. Anyway, there is other breaking news today. So the day began, because the eyes weren't on, you know, the Trump trial, on Congress, where the House Republicans, again, decided that they were going to impeach the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, for whatever reason. There were no high crimes, no misdemeanors. But, you know, they had to have an impeachment, and their impeachment of Joe Biden sputtered and, you know, went nowhere. So they turned to Mayorkas, and they impeached him in the House by one vote, one vote. By the way, that one vote majority is retiring. Gallagher, I think, is his name. Republicans, they're dropping like flies. Anyway, that's a story for another day. But soon, because he's not waiting till the end of the year or the end of his term. He's gone. All right, so because they, by a one-vote majority, impeached Mayorkas in the House, they had, you know, the next step is you send it to the Senate where they have the trial. Now, the Senate these days is controlled by the Democrats. The Democrats have a majority. a one vote majority, but a majority nonetheless. And, you know, color me surprised that this time the Democrats are holding together. You know, it used to be the Democrats, it was like herding cats. You couldn't do it. But the Democrats are much more disciplined now than the Republicans are, which are just a shadow of a party. I don't know what they are. So they had you know, it's so weird because I think back to when the Democrats brought articles of impeachment against the former guy, and the walk from the House over to the Senate side was very solemn, very, you know, by the book. This is how you do it. And there's a group of them and they march, I think, not single file, but like double file over across the Capitol from the House side to the Senate side. And they deliver the articles of impeachment. So they did that today. But just seeing Marge Q. Green near the front of the line renders it all farcical, just all ridiculous, all
bullshit,
just bullshit, because it's theater. And it's not even good theater. It's theater of the absurd. So they march it across. And then there's Chuck Schumer. And Chuck Schumer, so I think, and again, it was hard to keep track of it because it was so stupid, but there were two articles of impeachment. The first one, I guess, went down. It's going down. here it is. All right, let me read to you. House Republicans have sent to the Senate two articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, a step that launches a trial in the Senate as Republican lawmakers seek to highlight President Joe Biden's handling of immigration policy. The Democratic-controlled Senate, however, is expected to quickly dismiss the charges without a trial. This is obviously from this morning's news roundup before all this happened, but that's exactly what happened. So the first one, I forget exactly, because, you know, I'm doing 20 things at once here in the morning. But the first one went down. I mean, it didn't pass, right? And then this happened. Let me just play the audio for you. It goes like this.
Perspective
on. Oh, no. I think I... Did I, or is it on this computer? Oh, it's on this computer. Phew, I scared myself. I thought I erased it. Doesn't mean it'll actually be here. Let's try this one.
Majority Leader is recognized.
Here we go.
I raise a point of order that impeachment Article 2 does not allege conduct that rises to the level of a high crime or misdemeanor as required under Article 2, Section 4 of the United States Constitution and is therefore unconstitutional.
Unconstitutional. So this is Mike Lee, I believe. Is it?
Under the precedence and practices of the Senate, the chair has no power or authority to pass on such a point of order. The chair, therefore, under the precedence of the Senate, submits the question to the Senate. Is the point of order well taken? Senator from Utah is recognized.
Madam President, as long as the majority leader was moments ago,
okay, I'm not even going to play this for you. So basically that happened and it launched a series of votes that the Republicans kept bringing up these motions to adjourn the hearing, move it into a closed hearing behind closed doors, because I guess they're embarrassed. They don't want the American people to know that they don't know what the hell they're doing. Those votes kept going down. It was a vote of 51 to 49. And then finally, just moments before I hit the air, this headline from the Associated Press. Senate votes to dismiss impeachment charges against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Done. Charges dismissed. Thing is over. Wasted time. It's not like they don't have work to do. They actually do. They have work to do. But they're not. Oh, and Sinema and Manchin voted with the Democrats voted in lockstep. Good. Every once in a while, they do the right thing. Very rarely once in a while, but, you know. There was other stuff going on over the last 2 days. By the way, yesterday, I mentioned it briefly, we had guests in the studio, so I didn't have a whole lot of time to get into the news. And by the way, we've got an important guest coming up in a few minutes. If you're on social media, of late, you've been seeing posts that say Project 2025, educate yourself. Know what this is about. And I agree. We need to know, because this is, it's put together by the Heritage Foundation. The Republican Party, or what's left of it, has embraced this. And this is their game plan going forward if they are to regain control of the White House and the government, which we cannot let happen. But should they, we need to know what they're planning. And, you know, I know there's a website. It's project2025.org. But I didn't want to spend the time reading it. I really didn't. So last week, I get, you know, Rachel Bitticoffer has been a guest on this program. And I get an email from her. I don't think it was just to me. I think it was to her Substack. I subscribe. And it said, you need to read this new Substack. It's called Project 2025 Takedown. So I did. I went over and I subscribed. All these Substacks, you know, most of them, I think, have a paid version, but they, just about all of them, have a free version too. And I need to start putting the show up on Substack. I'm just lazy, which is why I haven't done it yet. But I will. I will add that to my distribution list. So if you are a Substack, my Substack is just NicoleSandler.substack.com. Again, it's there, but I've not done anything with it. But I will. It's on my list. Anyway, so this is this Project 2025 Takedown is put together by a woman named Tiffany Torres Williams. And I subscribed to it. I read like the first installment. And then I contacted her and I invited her on the show. Well, it turns out it's even better than what it appeared on the surface, because Tiffany lives in Montana. And I guess, well, we'll find out up until when. She used to consider herself a conservative Republican. Kind of interesting. You know, I've been saying that I would like to interview a reasonable Republican to just find out how they could even still call themselves Republicans. Well, I don't think she does anymore, but you know, we'll get into that anyway. So she's coming up. I'm going to share with you her introduction in just a moment before she gets here, so you get a bit of background on what she's doing. But there was a bit of news that I saw right before I went to bed last night that made me sad. Former Florida governor and senator Bob Graham died on Thursday. Why are we just hearing about it now? He died on Thursday? Wow. I thought he died yesterday, but this says he died Thursday at the age of 87. Maybe they just held it back for whatever reason. Bob Graham was a great man. And it's so unusual to say that about somebody who was a Florida governor and senator, because he was the last great governor and or senator from Florida. He was a decent, good man. I got to interview him once. I went looking for the interview. You know what? I should look on my website and see if I have anything with him there, because I looked in my Dropbox with all my old stuff, but I might have had him on. I'm just going to look. Bob, Graham. You know, his daughter, Gwen Graham, ran, but wasn't great. I did. It was, it looks like it was October of 2008. Is that right? So yeah, I may pull, not for today, obviously, but at some point I may pull a clip from that if I can locate it. 2008. Was it 2008? Was it? I don't know. Anyway, Bob Graham died, and that's sad. Florida could use a turnaround, could use another Bob Graham, although maybe that ship has sailed. Oh, that's sad. Anyway, I just had to acknowledge him, because so often we hear about our statesmen who have left us, and usually I don't feel like I need to mention them, but in this case, yeah, I did. All right, so let me share with you a little bit from Tiffany Williams, Project 2025 Takedown. She should be joining us any minute now, I hope. I always worry when they, you know, people are coming on Zoom and if I don't know them, but she'll be here. Okay, so she here's a little bit of what she wrote in the first installment of this new Substack newsletter. Project 2025, the Heritage Foundation's blueprint to abolish the Constitution and overthrow democracy as we know it if Trump is reelected. That's what it is. From their own website, project2025.org, right-wing extremists outline their objectives, including gutting most federal agencies like the Department of Education and the DOJ, and installing Trump lackeys in every place of government. Worse, she writes, the 900-page document brags that, quote, Dobbs was just the beginning, and that abortion will be outlawed in every jurisdiction in America, regardless of the reason. Okay, so I say, did you hold on to your pussy hats, everyone? Because we need to break them out again. See, John says he died yesterday. The Associated Press said he died Thursday. Thank you, John O, in the chat room. That's what I thought. He died. They didn't hold it from us for a week. The AP just got it wrong. Go figure. All right. Let's see. Under a new Trump presidency, assistance to foreign countries relies on those countries, quote, clear and unambiguous support of Trump's agenda. The document talks about deleting references to sexual orientation, gender identity, DEI, gender equity, reproductive health and reproductive rights from all federal documents. She writes, there will be no more federal protections based on race or sexual orientation. She said they want to outlaw people who produce or distribute pornography and they get to decide what that means. And then adds, no more flowers in the attic or Lolita in public libraries. And worse, it gets worse than that because we've talked about that, right? So I see Tiffany's here. Hold on one second, Tiffany. I got to get our shot set up because I am a one woman show here. And it takes me a second. But one moment we are. Let's see. It's monitor two. It's always something. If it's not one thing, it's another. Here we go. All right. So anyway, I was reading to you a little bit from the Project 2025 Takedown Substack. It's project2025takedown.substack.com. You should subscribe to get these missives. And see, we all need to know what this is all about. So with that, Tiffany Torres-Williams, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm hoping I also have some technology issues. So I'm hoping that I get to stay and not have any problems with my terrible internet in, you know, rural America. But
yes,
we'll see.
Well, you're in good company here because I have gremlins. You know, I moved recently from Florida to Arizona and the gremlins came with me. So it's nice. A thing. Some of the regulars in the chat room think it's a conspiracy that, you know, because of what I talk about occasionally, YouTube screws with me, but you never know. Who knows? It could be anything. Anyway, welcome to my world. So Tiffany, you just launched the Project 2025 Takedown Substack. And I was telling the listeners, I heard about it from Rachel Bitticoffer, who sent out an email blast. Now, did you know she was going to do that?
I didn't. And so I wrote my first post on a Sunday night, and then Monday morning, I started getting flooded with information. And I think one of my friends had shared it with her, and that's kind of how that connection was made. But it's actually great because I've read her most recent book, Hit 'Em Where It Hurts.
Yep.
And got a lot of information that I didn't know about the Heritage Foundation from that book. And so then I kind of had a basis for understanding like where this ideology is coming from and how harmful it could potentially be. And so I think that's a great book, a great tool for people who need to understand kind of a little bit more about, you know, where we could potentially be going if we don't start really speaking the truth about what right-wing extremists are trying to do to our country. Uh-huh. And so, but I kept hearing about Project 2025 just from, you know, friends or people who are paying attention And I kept hearing it from like the same like two or three people over and over and over again. And then when I would go out and talk to my friends who were also very politically involved, they wouldn't know a thing about it. And so that really started to worry me. I started to think, how can we start having better conversations about this? So that's why I started the Substack.
Great. Well, I'm so glad you did, because as I was saying, you know, if you're on social media for the last few weeks, I've been seeing these posts everywhere that say Project 2025, you need to know what this is about. And I agree. We all need to know what this is about. But it, unless you went to the website and read all of it, which frankly, I don't have the stomach to do, you couldn't. So I knew some of what had been reported, but yours was the first, like, we are dedicated to telling you what this is about, and very necessary. So when I got Rachel's email about it, I immediately went and said, oh, this is great. I got to get her on the show. And thus I wrote to you, and here we are today. So, but a bit of background I want to get to, because you said that you were a conservative Republican. You were until a certain time, or are you now? Where? Because looking at your social media, you don't appear to be, but so tell us your political metamorphosis.
Yeah, so I grew up a conservative Christian. I spent all summer at church camp. I ended up going to a conservative Christian college, Abilene Christian University in West Texas. And that was really kind of my entire foundation. And I think that what has happened with a lot of people who, you know, considered or consider themselves Christians, especially within their upbringing, is that Trump was a real, he really threw a log on the fire, and, you know, everything kind of exploded when he became president, because I think that a lot of us felt lied to. And so I know that, my kids were really young in 2016 when he was elected. I didn't think that that was even possible. I didn't think, you know, somebody who brags about sexual assault and just has the past that he had could have become president.
Right.
And then that happened. And a lot of my Christian friends and family members were the ones who made that happen. And so I think a lot of us started to really question, if not our faith, then at least our faith foundation. And so there's kind of this movement of, you know, what are called deconstructing Christians, who are kind of taking things apart and going like, where did we go wrong? What happened? How are we sitting in the same church building, listening to the same sermons? And one of us thought, hey, I'll vote for this man for president. And the others of us thought, like, hey, we should take things like taking care of our neighbor seriously. So it was just, and so anyway, yeah, I became more politically active, actually became politically active for the first time after he was elected. And now I work for the Montana Democratic Party. Wow. And I help Democrats get elected.
Oh my God, I just got goosebumps. Well, I'm glad to hear that. So, you know, so many people who grew up as you did just take, you know, the word from their parents or their church, who shouldn't be involved with politics anyway, but they tend to, and they get their, or think they're getting news from right-wing outlets like Fox or Newsmax or right-wing talk radio. Do you watch any of that stuff? Or did you? I mean, my question is, how did you get out of that cult, closed information circle? You know, because people who just watch Fox and think they're getting their news don't have a clue as to what's really going on.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I was that engaged at that point. I mean, I certainly wasn't paying close attention. I remember there being I remember Bill O'Reilly being on, you know, the TV in the campus center at college. And I remember I remember like Young Republicans and things like that. But I just personally nothing had given me a reason to become engaged. And maybe I was just kind of checked out. And I think that that's a tool, right? Like, that's a tool that's being used is misinformation and, blatant lies and things like that. And that works on people until they have kind of this aha moment. Like I said, my aha moment for changing my politics anyway was Trump becoming elected. And I know a lot of Republicans are there. They just feel like they don't feel like they're Democrats, and they can't abide what is happening in the Republican Party now. And so they just kind of feel like they don't have a political home. Other ones have obviously bought it hook, line, and sinker. And then there are people like me who kind of went like, if I actually put a side by side of my values You know, and the side by side would be the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, you know, maybe Libertarian or Independent. I really actually align more than anything with becoming with being a Democrat. And so I know that that's where I am. That's where my husband was. That's where a lot of my friends are. And, you know, I would say to conservatives, look out, yeah, because we're pissed and we're going to use all of that energy to turn things around.
Good. So Tiffany, I'm sorry. I was dealing with audio. We had some echo. It's gone now. So you didn't vote for Trump in 2016, or did you? No.
No, I absolutely could not.
You know, because you saw what went on. I'm sure the access.
There was any way that he could be elected.
Right. I'm sure the Access Hollywood tape offended you, as it should have offended anybody who heard it. Right.
Yeah, I was offended more before that, to be honest. I remember like celebrity feuds that he would get in. I mean, I was just never impressed by him as a person. I never watched The Apprentice.
Right.
I always thought that he was appalling. And so, you know, the moment that he descended on that escalator and said that he was running for president, I kind of laughed it off. I was kind of like, okay,
so did
yeah,
I. You thought, okay, this is a stunt. This is, you know, just typical Trump stuff, right?
Right. And I will say there's something also deeply personal that he did that offended me and a lot of people that went to college with me. And that is that Dr. Kenneth Brantley, who was the doctor who contracted Ebola, he was in an African country and he was serving mission work, I think, with Samaritan's Purse. He was in the graduating class before me at Abilene Christian University. And Donald Trump wrote a tweet, you know, that was back in 2014 that that happened. And Donald Trump wrote a tweet that basically said like, oh, it's so, you know, so great that people go out and risk their lives to do this, but we shouldn't have to accept them back in our country if they're going to be a risk or something like that. Like, it was just it was so personal. It's one of those moments, which he's had a lot of these, but like shutting up is free. He didn't have to say anything. And yet he viciously went out and attacked somebody who I think most Christians would believe was doing something good for the world.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my classmates were offended by that. I'm good friends with, you know, Dr. Brantley's family members. And so, you know, again, just many instances of Donald Trump contradicting very openly what Christians supposedly believe. And that's why I never took him seriously. And then he became our president. And then I just walked around in a daze.
You and me, a lot of us did. I fell into a deep depression. I couldn't believe that this happened. This man who is a con man, an overgrown child who thinks the rules don't apply to him, that he's above it all somehow. And with such impunity, the stuff, you know, and the lies. Every time he opens his mouth, it's a lie. And then to see the evangelical Christian community embrace him, I couldn't explain it, but for you, for someone who was a Christian or is a Christian, that must have hurt.
Yeah, it was really, it hurt my family relationships. It hurt close friendships. I am in some ways still trying to recover from that. It felt like a huge betrayal, and it felt like I had been lied to.
Well, you were.
And right. And as a woman, I think especially women were really, you know, growing up at least in the way that I grew up, women were constantly told that our value was in our sexual purity. And so that meant that we couldn't wear spaghetti straps and we had to have, you know, shorts that weren't what they considered too short and things like that. And so then to go out and hear that this like absolute womanizer who was sleeping with, you know, porn stars and supermodels and cheating on all his wives, like that was what people valued. It just felt like a real bait and switch.
Right. And when he talks about, you know, being sent by God, when he compares himself to Jesus and goes into that imagery, that must drive you crazy.
It really does. I mean, I guess trying to keep a sense of humor about it.
You have to.
Like all right. Of these. Yeah, you absolutely have to. I love all the photos or video, you know, photoshopped photos that I see of him standing next to a cross, you know, and all these like evangelical Facebook groups and things like that. Oh, but we just make fun of it at this point, because what else can you do?
I got to show you. I got to bring up this picture. I didn't pull it up here, but I will. 1 second. This, you know, he is now finally on trial for one of his one of the four felony cases, some 32 of the 90 some odd counts against him. But hold on, I got to show you this. So there's been 2 days that he's been in court so far. And oh, where is it? Oh, come on. Oh, I know where I can find it. Bear with me. I do this all myself here. So give me 1 second. But this is hysterical. So he, oh, God, messages, and here it is. Okay, so there's been criticism that in both the 2 days they've been in session so far, Trump fell asleep. Now, I get it. He's an old man. It's kind of boring. I'll tell you, if I was in that courtroom, I'd fall asleep, but I'm not the one on trial. Anyway, he posted something earlier today on Truth Social. It says, I wasn't sleeping. And then in all caps, I was praying.
Oh my God. I had not seen that yet. I so appreciate you pointing that out to me. Because anybody who believes in God wouldn't be in the position that he's in right now. I mean, they wouldn't be sitting in a courtroom, you know,
right.
Or at least believes in the values that, I don't know, people in Christian communities always talk about biblical values, and it's like, what part of your actions align with what we're considering biblical values?
Just, oh my God. It really, I mean, I heard my husband laughing from the other room, and it kept going. I'm like, what is so funny? Sometimes laughs at things that aren't really funny. He's like memes, and it's like, I don't get it. Sure. But so I'm like, okay, I got to see this, because the laughter hadn't stopped. And I walked in and I saw that. I'm like, okay, that reaction made sense. One last question on this subject, then we're going to get on to Project 2025. But when he spoke at Liberty University and said 2 Corinthians, now I'm an atheist Jew. I don't know from 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, I don't know, but I knew that he got it wrong. And he just made a fool of himself, and these people still embrace him. Is it just going along with the gang? Is it an Emperor's New Clothes thing, do you think?
You know, to me, it almost feels like a game to them. And I don't think it started out that way, but you know, I think that they've had to do so much at this point to defend his, you know, heinous behavior and his honestly making a mockery of the Bible and Christianity. They've had to go so far to defend it that it has now become like a game. And, there's very few, I would say, you know, evangelical mega pastors that I pay attention to.
Uh-huh.
But one of them is Sean Fuchs, and I might be saying his last name wrong. He quite possibly broke up Lauren Boebert's marriage, which that's like a whole other aside. But he spends a lot of time on social media defending Trump. And when Trump released his Bible, the Trump Bible, yes. The God Bless America, yes. Bible with the, you know, song lyrics to Lee Greenwood's song, yeah. And you know, just all kinds of insanity within that Bible. Just the fact that he's hawking a Bible is ridiculous.
It's,
but
it's gross.
I really paid attention, and they cannot be serious anymore when they defend him or his behavior. Like, they can't. I don't see how they possibly could. They're not serious people, and they're the reason that so many people don't want to be in churches anymore, because we don't like feeling lied to. And so, yeah, I was appalled when he said 2 Corinthians. Of course, I chuckled and laughed and went, you know, here's another example of him like not having any idea what he's talking about.
Yep.
But at this point, I think that it's just a big joke, and everybody's in on the joke.
Now it's just compounding one after another after another. So, Tiffany Torres Williams, so now you're working with the Democratic Party. You realize that you've been lied to. You know, what gets me is I listen to, and he still says this, as do Republican officials, about the abortion issue. Now, if you can be against abortion, don't get an abortion. But to to do what they did, and then to lie about it and say, oh, those Democrats, they abort babies up until and after the moment of birth. They kill them after they're born. That just doesn't happen. And yet they continue to double down on it. And, you know, at least be honest with people and let them make their own decisions once they have the facts in front of them. I believe in truth above all else, yet they insist on lying.
Yeah, I think that making abortion, you know, a major issue in the 2022 election is actually going to be one of the most horrible things for Republicans. You know, everybody's been describing them as the dog that caught the car, but I mean, they clamped on.
Yes,
and so
they did.
I think that, you know, back in maybe 2019, or I'm just trying to think of years that I had like deep conversations with my Christian friends about abortion. But back in those years, a lot of times, you would try to explain that late term abortion is not a thing and that's always families that loved and planned for their babies. And I just happened to be in a position, I was a photographer for 10 years before I started working in politics, but where I, you know, unfortunately had to witness some of those births and then record the, you know, create memories for the parents who were saying goodbye to their babies that they had to abort because of a heart condition or because of like some amount of suffering. And so because I had those stories, I would always just kind of relay those stories and say like, you know, I don't know anybody. I don't know a doctor who would perform an abortion because some woman had just changed her mind. But let me tell you about my client, Sarah. You know, I always did it with my client's permission. Mm. She had to say goodbye to her son, Oliver, in the 32nd week because his heart was failing and because she didn't want him to continue suffering. Yeah. And so I would just kind of explain that. And that always, people could understand that. And so what we didn't have before was that we didn't have a lot of stories like that were out there because those were so private. But now Republicans have made it so that women are literally fighting for their lives if they're having, you know, health problems during their pregnancy or, you know, a miscarriage or whatever. And so those stories are out there now. And I think that people really can understand that and empathize. Any woman who has had a child knows that if something goes wrong, it could become deadly.
Right.
And so,
The reason that it remains on the books, that yes, it for the life of the mother, for, you know, a few very rare reasons, there are late-term abortion is allowed. It's never done because, as you said, the woman changed her mind or for any other reason than the mother is going to die or the baby is going to suffer horribly and cannot live a life. It's only done out of compassion. And for them to twist it around and turn it into something ugly and call, you know, Democratic women murderers because that allowance remains on the books in just such a rare need like this. I commend you, Tiffany, because I've met a lot of, you know, a lot of people who are so rigid in their belief. And it's like, nope, if they said it, it's true. And you can't tell me any different. So thank you for having an open mind and understanding the difference between lies and fact and opting to do the right thing. This is opposite world craziness that we're living in is just nuts. So let's turn to Project 2025. So you go to project2025takedown.substack.com. There you can and should subscribe. Here's what you see when you get there for those watching on video. And you tell your story. Hi, I'm Tiffany. And why you decided to do this. So why did you decide to do this?
You know, I tell people that, you know, my Roman Empire, the thing that lives rent free in my head is constantly just trying to get through to people who used to be me. And what can I say to them to help them understand that the path that we're going down is really dangerous and it's not what they want. You don't want what Christian nationalism has for you. I don't care who you are. It is grim and bleak and, you know, they're going to take freedoms that you didn't even realize you had because you've been taking them for granted for so long. And so the thing that lives rent-free in my head is how to have conversations with people who are like who I used to be. And so I always knew that I wanted to do something. I want to do something outside of my work, I wanted to do something with that education component. I think I'm really good at taking really complicated issues and breaking them down for the average audience. And so I just didn't have the opportunity or just didn't see, I just didn't see a path until I started reading about Project 2025. And then I went, okay, not only is this really horrifying and I don't want to live in a world where this, what they have outlined is possible. I did actually read it, which we can talk about later, how I got through it.
Yep.
But, and then I just decided, like, this is the thing. Like, if I'm going to throw all my energy into educating people about something, it needs to be this. And so, you know,
great.
Let's say best case scenario, Biden wins in November. And we don't have to worry about this quite as much, at least until the next iteration comes along. Maybe I'll transform that into something else. Maybe I will have gotten really comfortable writing and sharing. Or maybe I'll just go back to my life. But for the next, what is it, 6 or 7 months?
I'm going to
be focusing
on this, right?
This, yeah.
So up on the screen now, if you go to project2025.org, you get their website and there's a picture of the White House. And it says building now for a conservative victory through policy, personnel, and training. And then you see the tabs on the top: policy, personnel, training, playbook, about, login, all that stuff. So you took it upon yourself to go through and read all their stuff. And they're not hiding anything, are they? They're laying it all out there. What is Project 2025?
So the Heritage Foundation, since before the Reagan administration, has been producing, in a presidential election year, they produce a document that basically outlines all of their hopes and dreams for, you know, what they want if a conservative is elected president. And they felt like that was really successful when Reagan was elected. And, you know, they were able to kind of infuse his cabinet with what they wanted. And so they've continued doing it every presidential election year. They create a project, you know, whatever the year is. Wow. This year is their most ambitious year yet. And there are several things that about this document that are a lot different from what we've seen from the Heritage Foundation before. I would say scarier. And as you saw on that website, there are aspects of this that they are already putting into place because they fully expect Trump will be reelected. They fully expect that he will be their surrogate for all of the things that they want and that they will be able to just from day one, you know, wipe out what they call the deep state, which is actually just like federal employees who,
federal employees who are not loyalists to Donald Trump. That's because what they're looking for are their own so-called deep state, right? It's their only deep state if they're either neutral or they're Democrats. They're only deep state if they're not Republican or Donald Trump sycophants.
Right, exactly. And a lot of times these are just, I mean, they're federal employees who have worked for decades, regardless of the administration. All they really want is to make sure that really good policy, you know, affects people's lives in really positive ways. And that's who, you know, the Heritage Foundation and Trump want to get rid of. And so my stepdad worked for the USDA for most of his career. I mean, I would certainly not call him a sycophant of anything other than just wanting to help the people in his community, you know, get farm loans.
Right.
And so, I've heard people say, who did I hear this from? I'll think of it later. Michael Steele said this on, I think, Politics Girls podcast, but you know, he said, you may think that Donald Trump doesn't actually care that much and doesn't want to fill all of these positions himself, but he said, I've been in the room with that man and he wants to have a hand in everything. He wants to control everything. Right. He wants to make sure that everything that is done to serve him and no one else. And so, you know, I believe the Heritage Foundation when they say we are already vetting people to take these jobs. And I believe, you know, Liberty University is one of the supporters of Project 2025. I believe them when they say we want an education department that only does what we want as Christian nationalists.
Right.
You know, I believe them. We have to believe them. They're doing it.
And in fact, on their website, under the tab personnel, if you click on that, it's the Presidential Personnel Database. Want to be considered for positions in a presidential administration? Submit your resume today to be included in the personnel database. And it's got a whole questionnaire that I did not click through to read because I'm afraid it will ask, you know, about loyalty or, you know, make sure that you would be one of their deep staters. He will only bring in people loyal to Trump because he wants to be America's first dictator.
Yeah, right? I pulled this up on my computer. If you don't mind, I could even just read from it. But,
okay.
You know, they're asking a lot of questions. I have not gone through the rigmarole of like creating a whole new identity so that I can answer these questions. And
I don't blame
you. Honestly, I don't want my name on any of their lists.
No.
But I have considered filling out their, you know, it's almost like an application on their website. And so they ask a lot of questions. Name one person, past or present, who has most influenced the development of your political philosophy. Name a book that has most significantly shaped your political philosophy, and please explain its influence on your thinking. Name one living public policy figure who you greatly admire. Why? I mean, they're asking these very deep questions so that they can find out, are you going to be a yes man? Are you going to line up behind us? Do you have your own thoughts, basically? Or are you going to do everything that we say and we ask? It's like the weirdest job interview questions I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And that's because it's just self-serving.
Of course, because he wants only Trump loyalists. And that's what they're trying to assemble here. What other things should people who haven't dived into the 900 pages or so of this mind-blowing stuff that you've read, what else should we know? What are the biggies that you like, this scares me?
Yeah. So I think one of them is just a complete erasure of LGBTQ people. I mean, by now we all have, you know, LGBTQ people in our lives who we love and care about their existence. I mean, fortunately, we've come to a place in history where we don't ask that people hide that anymore.
Right.
And so, you know, within this document, they want to go through, you know, all sorts of federal papers and documents and just basically erase any reference to them. And if they're doing that with like paper, they're going to do that with human beings. And that really scares me. They don't want any LGBTQ people serving in the military. You know, just so many ways that we have gotten past this will become our reality if Project 2025 comes to fruition, and we're going to force people back into closets.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to force people into marriages that they don't want to be in. I mean, there's just, I don't see a positive outcome to any of this. And sadly, that was the case for people for a really long time. You know, it hasn't been so long that we've forgotten what that looks like. And so I just, you know, even with my most conservative friends, I just ask, like, do you want to go back there? Do you truly want to go back there? Do you want to go back to a place where the people that you love can't be who they are? So
have you won over any of your old friends, like people who are Christian conservatives and just it's so ingrained in them that they feel like this is what they have to do. They've got to follow this route because that's what the church tells them, and that's what their friends and family tell them, but you know what's wrong. I'm just curious what those conversations are like.
It seems like there's one or two paths that people can take when I talk to them. One path is that they can be really good listeners, and they don't, even if they don't agree with everything that I'm saying, they can walk away from a conversation feeling like we can still stay in relationship with each other. We can continue to trust each other. And that I have said a lot of things that they do agree with. I mean, they might not agree with everything. I don't expect that. But, and then the other path is that they just cut me out completely because I don't think I allow people to have a, I don't think I allow people in my life to take a neutral stance on oppression. And I will just keep talking about it. So I've certainly lost a lot of relationships and that has been painful, but I think it would be more painful to me to just pretend that these things aren't happening or to just pretend that I'm okay with it. And so for me, I know it's very easy for me to say, I know exactly how I feel about this because I've already done the work. Like I've done the work of, you know, unlearning a lot of the things that I learned and believed growing up. And I'm more comfortable making people uncomfortable than I am sitting in the shame of not caring about other human beings.
Good for you. Good for you. So I glance over at the website again, and they have the different pillars. This is as well thought out and planned. And as you say, it's 900 pages of plans. This is not abstract. This is, they've got their game plan. It says they have a 180-day playbook. The time is short, and conservatives need a plan. The project will create a playbook of actions to be taken in the first 180 days of the new administration to bring quick relief to Americans suffering from the left's devastating policies.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. You know, really? What? Yeah, what? I want to know what has the left done that's so devastating to America? Let's see. We got infrastructure, lowering the cost of prescription drugs, making sure you can get health insurance. I mean, it's doublespeak. But so are there any specifics you can share with us that make you go, you know, that add to your desire to expose what they're all about?
Yeah, this is such a mess. I will just show you. Okay. When I was reading it, I just went through it and like page by page, I took kind of a category that jumped out at me. And then I wrote about, I wrote the things that I saw. And so, you know, for example, we just talked about LGBTQ rights. Mm-hmm. And so they want to delete the terms sexual orientation, gender identity, DEI, gender equality, gender awareness, reproductive health, and reproductive rights. And it says somewhere in that document, and I should have referenced the page, but the First Amendment doesn't cover transgender individuals.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. And then there's this, every podcast that I've listened to about this topic, it's also just like, hey, guys, by the way, an aside, there's a whole paragraph or several paragraphs in there that says that pornography would be outlawed and people who distribute pornography should be imprisoned. And make educators and public librarians who purvey pornography, whatever that means in their definition, be registered as sex offenders. And so, again, it's kind of like, first of all, you don't get to decide what other people, what type of entertainment other people enjoy.
Thank you.
Second of all, I don't feel comfortable with whatever your definition of what pornography is.
Right.
Because again, as like an 11-year-old, I was told I couldn't wear spaghetti straps because it might cause somebody else to sin. And so, I don't trust that judgment.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you. So on the Substack, we're going to close to the end of the hour. So it's again, project2025takedown.substack.com. You can sign up for free. You put these out how often? I mean, it's still at the beginning. You're just really getting started. So what can we expect when we get an email from you?
So what I'm hoping people walk away with is ways to have better conversations. I just want to share some of the things that I've learned along the way about how to have these hard conversations with people who maybe are reluctant to have them or think that politics doesn't affect them. So I'd really like to not only be able to break down really complicated things and share it with people, and I don't want anybody to spend their weekend reading all 920 pages like I did. So, you know, I have, like I said, I've taken pages and pages of notes. This is my abortion page. And so I want them to understand, you know, kind of issue by issue, what Project 2025 has in store for us if it comes to fruition. And then I also want people to feel empowered to have better conversations with, you know, their friends, neighbors, loved ones, coworkers, person that they do Pilates with, you know, whatever.
Right. No, information is power. And the best, you know, ammunition we have to fight back against Trump and the people who blindly follow him is to be able to converse with them and explain what they're lying about, what the reality is, and what's in store for us should he get back into office. And they're telling us right here, So, I mean, we've got the facts. The fact that they put all this in writing, I find astounding. Were you surprised when you read it that they were actually saying the quiet parts out loud?
I really was. And again, I haven't spent any time reading any of the other Project Whatever documents. And so maybe that's just always how they operate. But I think, you know, again, like I said, they're planning on this election being their most ambitious yet. They're planning on completely wiping out, you know, entire federal departments and replacing them with their own people who don't have the best interests of, you know, the American public at heart. And yeah, I mean, another thing, sometimes I would just take notes and write down exactly like, okay, so it actually does say the Dobbs decision was just the beginning. Like, that is a thing that they have said.
I read that from your thing at the beginning of the show. They said that's just the beginning. So, you know, I don't know if you were involved in the Women's March on January 21st of 2017, but millions of us were, and we wore those stupid hats, the pussy hats. I think it's time we get them out again because the stakes are even higher now because he's been in office. He knows now who to surround himself with. You know, he had the test run. Now he can go for the kill, and we can't allow that to happen. And with it, this information that you have digested, and I give you all the credit in the world, thank you for reading all those 900 and some odd pages so that we don't have to, because I couldn't. But I so look forward to continuing reading your Substack to hear what you have to tell us so that then we can share that information with others. That's how we win this, is with truth, not his kind of truth, which is opposite world, but real truth. This is what they are advocating for. This is the Dobbs is just the beginning, should make everyone go, oh, no, it isn't. Right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
We got to take action. So Project 2025 takedown.substack.com. Anything else you want to say to people to encourage them to subscribe and get in on this and get informed?
If I could just make one plug for Rachel Bitticoffer's new book, it's
On the show. Okay. We've talked about it. I'll send you a link to, but please do. It's a great book. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is something that we are just inherently bad at as progressives, and that is saying exactly what you need to say to create like that just moment of fear in people. And like we've all pointed out, we're not having to make anything up because this is actually written down. They actually wrote it down. It's available to anybody who has the internet. And so, you know, I would just say get better at having really pointed conversations with people who maybe don't have, you know, the same Twitter feeds that we do, because they're mostly thinking about just how to make it day to day. It doesn't make them stupid. It doesn't make them uninformed. They don't want to have to think about this, but they're going to be living it if we don't do something. So
maybe you'll come back and we can do like a mock, you know, conversation. I could play the Trumper and you could have the conversation or we get an actual real Trumper on. If that's possible. So I hope you'll come back. I am so grateful that you're doing the Substack. I think it's so important. Perfect time. And I hope everybody subscribes and reads it, because it will only help us be more informed. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Nicole. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about this. And anytime anybody wants me to talk about it, I will say yes, because I think it's really important.
Awesome. Well, I will definitely stay in touch and we'll have you back on. I can't thank you enough. And I'm so impressed with you. We need more people like you who are willing to open their minds and listen to the truth. So thank you. And it was great to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. All right. Thanks for having me on, and we'll connect later.
Definitely. Thanks again. Bye-bye. Tiffany Torres Williams. Subscribe to her Substack. Again, free. I hope she has a paid version at some point, because, you know, she deserves to get paid for her work. But the fact that she's doing this, it's a public service and it's awesome. All right. With that, we've reached the end of another hour. All right. So tomorrow is Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. We always have the half hour before Howie comes on to talk about the news and open up the phones. So your chance to weigh in. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we got to stay informed and speak our minds. All right. See you tomorrow. Peace out.